Welcome to Beyond Blathers, the podcast where we dive deeper into the insects, fish, and fossils you can find in Animal Crossing New Horizons. I'm Sophia Osborne.
And I'm Olivia DeBercier.
And if you want to support the show, you can check out our merch store at etsy.com/shop/beyondblathers. We've got loads of fun stickers to decorate your water bottles, laptops, or whatever needs a bit of fun added to it.
So today we are talking about the soft-shelled turtle.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this one. I can't believe we haven't done it yet.
Yeah, me too. I guess we did the snapping turtle a long time ago, and that was good fun. So different turtle this time. It's kind of fun that they have two turtles. Like, among all the fish, you can catch a couple reptiles.
Yeah, and I like that it's not just like turtle. It's like specific, interesting turtles.
Yeah, I feel like the soft-shelled turtle is like an interesting choice. It's not what people think of first when they think about turtles.
Yeah, definitely not. It would have been cool to get like a tortoise in there too.
Oh yeah, like a little box turtle kind of looking thing. Oh, they're yeah. So adorable.
Or just throw a Galapagos tortoise in there.
Or like a sea turtle. Wait, do they have sea turtles in the game?
Let's check. No, it looks like those are the only two turtles.
Oh, that's weird. I would love it if we could catch sea turtles when we're scuba diving, but oh well.
I guess Cap'n is a turtle.
That's true.
But yeah. Well, I'm excited to get into it. I guess let's see what Blathers has to say. So if you bring a soft-shell turtle to Blathers, he'll say, "The soft-shelled turtle is not one to shy away from biting when provoked. In addition to its powerful bite, this little critter has the ability to breathe both above and below water. It has an unusually long neck, which it uses for both breathing and biting. Come to think of it, how did you manage to avoid being bitten? Well, it's a fearsome critter, but just look at that face. Rather silly. What?"
I like this quote. This is a really weird animal, and I'm happy Blathers doesn't go into detail about exactly any of these details, because that means I get to explain all the ways in which this turtle is such a mashup of strange and unusual adaptations.
It is just a weird looking creature too.
Yeah, like it's very much like a hybrid frog turtle Muppet looking thing. And if you watch videos, like, it also doesn't really move like exactly the way you expect a turtle to move. It's very strange. And like a lot of them, they have a very uniform color to them as well. Like, they're going to be like a uniform sort of patchy green or brown or gray even. And like, they just look vaguely like naked. And then they have this really long tubular nose. And if you look at a photo of their face close up, it's a really weird looking nose. But yeah, so they are a turtle, despite how weird they look. The family of soft-shelled turtles are named the Trionychidae, and they can be found in Asia, Africa, and North America. They live primarily in freshwater or even slightly salty or brackish marshes, ponds, lakes, and rivers, and they make up some of the largest species of freshwater turtles on the planet. The very largest species of the soft-shelled turtles, and really the biggest freshwater turtle in the world, is the Yangtze giant softshell turtle, which is about 3.25 feet long or a meter long.
Yeah, they look to me like, I think we've made this reference before in this podcast, but that episode of SpongeBob where Mr. Krabs is like out of his shell and he just looks really gross and naked and off.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know, it kind of looks like if someone put like a sock over a regular turtle.
Yeah.
Like, there just aren't really any seams in their body.
Yeah, and you're right, the nose is really, really, really weird. Like, it looks like, I don't know. Yeah, it just looks off. I don't know. I don't love their face.
No.
To be honest. No offense to them.
No, I get it. They're definitely like, they're like a bit of an ugly animal. But in a fun way, like a fun, intriguing way.
And so why are they called soft shell turtles? Are their shells actually soft?
They're soft in the same way like skin over bone is soft. So kind of. It'll probably help if I first describe how an ordinary turtle shell is constructed. I guess ordinary is kind of arbitrary here, but you know what I mean. If we were to look at the skeleton of a turtle, you'd see that it has two large sections of the shell. There's the bottom part that covers the belly. This is called the plastron. And then there's the upper part of the shell called the carapace. And these are fused along the sides and sort of open in the front and back where the appendages poke out of. Now let's talk about the structure of the shell. So imagine your ribs for a moment. I even find it helpful to feel your ribs when picturing this, because your ribs form this curved surface that wraps around the front and the back of your body. So turtles have this too, and when they're in an embryonic state, their ribs actually expand and flatten, and they morph into each other and become the plastron on the ventral side and the carapace on the dorsal side. So what you're seeing isn't just a shell, it's actually the backbone and the ribs of the turtle. And actually, I suppose you're not really seeing the backbone and ribs, because of course that's covered in skin and ligaments, and most obviously the scutes. And these are the hard plates that jigsaw together to form what most people would probably think of when they first think of the turtle shell. So this whole, the shell being part of the ribs and the backbone, is the reason that a turtle can't just slide out of its shell like you would see in cartoons. But what we see with soft-shelled turtles is a bit different. The soft-shelled turtle is missing the scutes. So instead, their dorsal side is very leathery to the touch. It's just sort of thickened skin, and it appears extremely smooth. Additionally, while other turtles have a hard piece of bone pretty much across their entire back and the sides of the shell, the soft-shelled turtles are missing the hard bit of bone under the very edges of the shell, so kind of the bits that stick out and flare out. Compared to other turtles, soft-shell turtles are a little bit more squishy, and they're also more flexible. Most turtles tend to look really, you know, clunky and uncoordinated on land, which makes sense given that they have a huge expanded ribcage and shell, so that's really heavy, it stiffens their entire body, and their legs are quite short and small, so they're just kind of awkwardly walking very slowly. However, the flexibility of the soft-shell turtle shell means that they're able to move a little bit quicker on land and in the water. Which brings me to the main thing I've noticed when I've seen soft-shell turtles in zoos, which is that they just look really weird and wrinkly.
Yeah, wow, that's so interesting. I'm realizing now that I did not really know what turtle shells were made of, and that is very metal, that is their rib cage basically like turned on its side and made into a shell. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's super cool. And like the other thing a lot of people think about turtles is that their shell is just sort of like a rock or like a snail shell, where if you touch it, they don't feel it. But that's just not really true. They've got blood vessels and stuff in the shell, so if their shell gets really badly damaged, it will bleed. So that's important to remember. I don't know if you're ever in a situation where you're near an injured turtle.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So going back to the soft-shelled turtle, we already talked about their long noses a bit and how weird looking they are, but why do they have those?
Yeah, they're kind of like little pig noses, so they almost look like they're for shuffling or something, but really they're sort of air tubes, because a lot of the time that they spend is just under the surface of the water, kind of hanging out. So the snorkel nose allows them to breathe air without having to move too close to the surface, thereby expending more energy and also potentially exposing themselves to predators. Often, really, the only time you're going to see them out of the water is when they're nesting, looking for a nesting spot, laying eggs. Even when they're underwater, a lot of the time they'll sort of half bury themselves in the substrate of the water with that nose sticking up. They will also bury themselves under the substrate during the winter when they are living in partially frozen over water bodies. And at this point, they will go into a hibernation state where they slow their metabolism.
Wow. So how are they breathing under frozen over ponds? That's really cool.
Yeah, it's really neat. And like many semi-aquatic or aquatic turtles find themselves in situations where they can't easily access air. Think of like sea turtles. They can dive quite deep and be away from the air for a long time. Or maybe they're taking a nap underwater. Maybe they're hibernating, as I mentioned before. So they need other ways to breathe. Many turtles are actually able to breathe through the cloaca, which is sort of like their butt. There are a lot of blood cells concentrated in the cloaca, and the skin there is rather thin. So they've got blood to pick up oxygen molecules and thin skin, which allows for oxygen to diffuse across the membrane from the water. So all they have to do is allow that oxygenated water to go up their butts.
Amazing.
I think it's a great solution. Very efficient. Might as well use the cloaca for more things.
Yeah.
The cloaca is already used for so much. With softshell turtles, they also have thinner skin along the rest of their body, more so than other turtles. So in addition to the butt breathing, they're also able to pass oxygen through the neck skin, their mouth, and the throat. Ultimately, this, in addition to a slowed metabolism, so you don't need as much oxygen to begin with, allows the softshell turtles to avoid suffocating in water where oxygen may be even less available, like marshes and ponds, which are known to have less oxygen than rivers and streams, which are moving and sort of bubbling a lot and getting lots of oxygen in there. And they can really just survive there for quite a long period of time.
So it's sort of like amphibians or fish with gills.
Yeah, basically, like instead of inhaling the oxygen, it just sort of moves through them passively. But sometimes they do have to move around, like move their bodies around a little bit to get that oxygen. For example, spiny softshell turtles have been observed flapping their arms around or doing a kind of underwater push-up. And that helps to mix the water up around them so that when they use up the oxygen in the water directly next to them, they can sort of push it away and get a new oxygenated water more close to them so that they can breathe from that. They may also open their mouths and pump water around their mouth and throat.
Wow. Very cool.
So now you know, when you see really any kind of semi-aquatic turtle, you can be like, hey, I know how they're doing that.
I know. I wish I could do that and just hang out underwater and not stress.
It honestly sounds really nice. I also learned actually in this process that even humans can a little bit, like obviously not enough to like survive if your mouth and nose were shut, but like we also have like a tiny, tiny amount of oxygen diffusion through our body as well, wow. Like beyond our mouth and nose. Isn't that cool?
That's really cool. Maybe we can evolve over a very long period of time to be able to do this.
In the next like 4 million years or something. Who knows?
Look probably forward to that day.
Yeah. Yeah, at this point, I certainly don't recommend trying to passively diffuse oxygen through your skin. I don't think that's going to work.
And so what are soft-shelled turtles eating?
They're pretty much carnivores, as Lathers mentioned, which is kind of funny because they don't look particularly like bloodthirsty, but they eat aquatic invertebrates like snails, crustaceans, and mollusks, as well as fish and amphibians, or even the odd bird or small mammal. So they're pretty opportunistic predators. And they're also pretty fast swimmers compared to other turtles, as I said before, because their shell is just more dynamic and their legs have more freedom of movement. They also have quite strong jaws. So think about the safety of your fingers before trying to pick them up, because they can use their flexible necks to whip out and grab prey as well as, you know, anything that's bugging them before chopping it up with their sharp jaws.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen one of these. I don't know where they're found, but I mean, how are they doing in the wild?
Yeah, so you could see them if you went out east in Canada. Like they're throughout North America. They seem to be pretty common, like especially near Florida and Louisiana area. But in short, they're really not doing well. It's hard to figure out exactly how many species there are, as I found that the sources for this varied, but it appears that there's somewhere around 30 species. Of the 28 species that I could find on the IUCN Red List website, 9 species are vulnerable, 5 are endangered, and 9 are critically endangered, which leaves only 5 as least concern. Now, I do have to mention, as always, IUCN only lists global populations. So of the 5 that are least concern, I know for sure that one, the spiky softshell, is listed as endangered within Canada. So just because those five species are globally not seeing decreases that correspond with a more severe listing on the red list does not mean that there are not threatened populations. There are several things that make softshells particularly vulnerable. One is that they're quite sensitive to aquatic pollutants. So similarly to amphibians, because they have such permeable skin, if there are harmful pollutants in the water, they're at higher risk of those pollutants entering their body. This is especially an issue in agricultural areas where agricultural chemicals readily enter waterways. Softshell turtles also go on land to lay eggs, as I said before. So females will bury their eggs along sandy or silty beaches and water edges. Normally, these eggs are at risk of being eaten by animals like foxes, raccoons, or birds. So even at the best of times, with no human disturbance, they aren't perfectly safe. And actually, in Ontario, with increased human habitation in softshell turtle range, we see a lot more raccoons coming in to eat garbage. So you have more of the turtle predators hanging around as well. The trouble is that as development increases on the shores of lakes, that often reduces the available sandy areas for females to lay their eggs, because they'll go onto the shore, they'll find a nice sandy or silty area, and then they'll like make a little hole, they'll put their eggs in there and then kind of cover it up to hide them. So let's take Ontario, for example. Ontario's lakes are famous for the really just absurd number of privately owned cottages that really go right up to the edges of lakes and ponds. And often the landscaping removes the natural shoreline, instead replacing it with turf or just really compacting it. Even if there is natural shoreline, there's a lot more people just stomping around the shore than there would have been even like, I don't know, 50, 60 years ago. So that really puts eggs at risk. Even areas that don't have cottages may have beaches that are prime locations for ATVing. So ATVing or going out on quads has massive environmental impacts because essentially you're compacting, ripping up, and eroding soft soils, which makes it harder for turtles to dig their nests, or it can crush the nests of the turtles that are already there. Now, I just have a lot of beef with the mass privatization of shore property and off-trail ATVs, so kind of went off on them for a while, but that is a significant issue, at least here in Canada. Another threat that these turtles face as aquatic animals are boat propellers, which can cause severe injuries or death in swimming turtles. Now, these are sort of the North American threats, though these also apply to Asia and Africa, but other unique challenges apply to soft-shelled turtles over there. In Asia and parts of Africa, soft-shell turtle may be eaten. It can be wild-caught or farmed for food, and it's a delicacy in some regions. So a lot of the time when you see soft-shell turtle on the menu, it isn't necessarily a wild-caught animal. Just making a point of saying that. But wild-caught animals, especially for turtles, they're slow reproducing, and when you wild catch a lot of slow reproducing animals, you're going to see population declines. And of course, that's what's happened here. So for example, the Indian soft-shelled turtle saw a major increase in illegal live trade in the 1990s for sale in the East Asian market. And the cartilaginous edges of the turtle shell are also traded as they are made into a food called kalapi. In Japan, their soft-shell turtles were particularly popular for meals, so we saw a lot of declines there for that, although now a lot of their soft-shell turtle is farmed. So basically what we're seeing is that in some places, soft-shell turtle is specifically sought after for food, while in other regions like New Guinea, northern India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh, soft-shell turtle will more so be eaten when it's caught for subsistence, but there isn't like a huge market for it. It's sort of like, if they catch it, they'll eat it kind of thing. Some interesting conservation cases are the Euphrates softshell turtle, whose range extends from Turkey through Syria, Iran, and Iraq. And its population has suffered a lot from conflict in the region, which has caused habitat destruction. We also see a lot of wetland draining around these areas, as well as dam construction, which can alter water flow in important turtle habitat and generally just separate different populations of turtles and make it harder for them to breed with one another. A particular species that has really quite a tragic story is the largest species of freshwater turtle, the Yangtze giant softshell turtle. This was a species that was found throughout the Red River Basin from Vietnam into China, and the last IUCN assessment in 2018 found only two individuals in reservoirs near Hanoi. According to the IUCN, a female turtle was found in 2020 near Hanoi, though she was sadly found dead in 2023. The last two individuals in the wild live in semi-artificial lakes, which have been dammed back with barrier structures. The last young sea female prior to the female captured in 2020 was apparently bought at a market in the 1930s for a traveling animal show before ending up at a zoo. She lived to over 90, and though she mated and laid a lot of eggs, they were always infertile. But this suggests a remarkable generation time of 100 years, because she passed away in 2018.
Wow.
This species faced harvesting pressures for adults and eggs for subsistence consumption. Once they were also known for being rare, there was a lot of motivation to find them and sell them illegally, so that didn't help. And of course, prior to this, the habitat was dammed in numerous locations, and habitat loss and degradation was likely what sort of began this turtle's decline. Tragically, it appears that unless we can find more individuals, the young sea giant softshell turtle is functionally extinct, with no known females left alive to reproduce. So it's a very sad story, especially because this is an enormous, beautiful turtle. It's got a lot of cultural value, but this is a really disturbed area. And yeah, so pretty much a major bummer there.
Yeah, that is. I mean, it's really sad that it doesn't sound like there was kind of more done to try to revive that population.
Yeah, like it's a real shame because, yeah, I was reading the report and it just sort of seems like it was really rare to begin with. And like there seemed to be a lot of like inability to sort of figure out, okay, where are these turtles? Who's finding them? Like when people would find them, they wouldn't necessarily report them. And so it sort of seems like by the time they realized that something was going on, it was sort of too late. Yeah, it's really such a shame. And like, yeah, even the ones that are alive today, I'm kind of shocked they're even in the wild. Like if you know that there's two individuals, that they wouldn't just like at least try and hold on to those ones in case a female is found. Because at this point, yeah, it is just like functionally extinct. I guess they probably just want those turtles to just like live their lives. So it is quite sad. But in terms of like solutions in Canada, the species survival strategy really emphasizes habitat conservation and head starting programs. These are programs where you, like most people are probably pretty familiar with them in terms of like sea turtle conservation. You remove the eggs from their nests when they're found, or you'll like find a female who's about to lay eggs and take those eggs as she lays them. And then they're artificially incubated and released when they hatch or at a stage of life when they're less vulnerable to predation or other specific threats. So there's just a very high likelihood of early death for young turtles. It's this life strategy that evolved because, you know, it used to work decently well before humans came along and made survival that much harder. It's a really interesting idea. Like I've seen it done. When I was out in Ontario, we happened upon, oh gosh, what was it called? A Blanding's turtle, I believe. And it was laying eggs. So we called up the reptile team and they came out. It was like middle of the night. And we just sat there and like she would lay eggs and they just take the eggs. And she like didn't even care. She was just like completely ignoring us. And we just like take the eggs and put them in like a little Tupperware with a little like sand on the bottom. And they were going to take those to an incubator. But it was quite funny to watch. She's just like completely, I don't know if oblivious or she's just like, was like, well, I got to get these out somehow.
Yeah.
Like they can't stay here. And yeah, so that's a pretty common strategy. It's obviously very high effort. So it is a very costly thing to do in Canada. You know, we have a lot of money towards conservation programs, so we're able to afford it. But ultimately, the habitat conservation is what we really need, and ensuring that we protect wetland habitats and prevent pollutants from entering these habitats. So it's definitely not, I wouldn't call it an ideal solution, but it is a solution.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I don't want to end on a super sullen note. I realized like I spent this whole morning reading IUCN reports and now I'm just like very depressed. Oh. So I don't recommend doing that. But on a more positive note, we have the Cantor or Asian giant softshell turtle, which is another critically endangered softshell. It's found in the Mekong River from Bangladesh to the Philippines. And in Cambodia, where part of the river passes through, the turtles virtually disappeared. They just hadn't seen them for years. But then in 2007, they found three nests, which produced over 100 hatchlings. These hatchlings were reared and released, and since then, they've been doing this a lot, and over 8,000 hatchlings have been released into the river. Conservation initiatives have even hired locals, scientists, and even those who have previously poached these turtles to now act as turtle guardians. So they go and patrol the river looking for turtles laying eggs so that they can watch and protect the nests. So today the turtle is still critically endangered, but there is hope for the species.
Oh, that is a nice note to end on.
Yeah, like it's, you know, the soft-shell turtle, they're just like this weird, maybe a little ugly creature, but they do need a lot of love and care and conservation. And yeah, I mean, their funny looking faces may not attract the average person, but I think that we should just, next time we see or hear about the soft-shell turtle, share some facts about their conservation, get people to care about them because they're very important and beautiful and we want to preserve them for future generations.
Totally. Well, thanks so much, Olivia. And thanks, everyone, for listening. If you want to support the show, you can join our Patreon to get exclusive rewards in the mail from Olivia. And make sure to check out our new sticker sheets on our Etsy shop.
You can also follow us on Instagram and TikTok.
Tune in next time to learn more about the insects, fish, and fossils you can find in Animal Crossing New Horizons. Bye.
Bye.